It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live. Welcome to Just a Bit Outside with Stark and Massaro. I am your host, Ian Starkman, and I am joined by my co-host, Mike Massaro. Lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including Packers-Rams game of the week, Patriots up, Cowboys down. The Big House is still rocking after their win over Ohio State. Maple Leafs sweep the West Coast, and our Olympic curling teams are set. But first, Mike, how was your sports week?
Stark, with the start of this podcast, I'm officially on holidays right now.
Congrats.
Thank you. Our course is done for the year, so I'm done. This weekend, I went up to my brother and sister-in-law's place, and Santa paid a visit to my niece. She didn't cry. She's just over a year old, so that was nice that she received Santa well. And beyond that, I was just jazzed that I had my first eggnog of the season. I don't know if you're an eggnog guy, but let me tell you, man.
I'm okay with eggnog. What do you just go rum with it, or what's the mix you like?
Well, to kick off the season, I like to just taste the vintage straight, just to see what it's about. But a little rum and eggnog is never a bad thing.
No, not at all. Yeah, I'm going to have to dive into that. I didn't even think about rum or eggnog season yet, but I guess it is official.
Well, that's the thing. It creeps up on you, and you know, before you know it, it's going to be sold out. So make sure you get there. The one I would suggest for you and for our friends in Southern Ontario here, if you can find your local Becker's.
Yes.
They make the best. Hands
down. Like the house brand? The Becker's house brand eggnog?
The Becker's by my house on the front door, it says eggnog now available. So you know this is serious business.
That's a sketchy Becker's. I've been there before too.
No, it isn't. They got the nog. They got the nog.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was a wild weekend. I'll call it that. It was just one of those, like, you know, really busy hustle and bustle type of weekends, I felt. Everyone in my house anyway. Yeah, same thing. Christmas on the minds, gift discussions, had some family in town doing some stuff. I went and visited some friends, had some drinks, you know, just that standard. Oh, yeah, got to go see this person, got to do that. So it was fun. But there was so much sports going on. My mind was elsewhere the entire time. I was at the rink with the boys, checking my phone. I was in conversations with my mother-in-law, looking at the TV. You know, it's one of those types of things. I'm going to use this time because we have so much to talk about today, Mike, that this topic isn't even going to come up. I needed to talk about it right now. I watched the match.
Mm.
I'm assuming you did not.
I did not.
Okay, so Friday, you know, it's American Thanksgiving Friday. Tee off at 4:00. It's Bryson DeChambeau against Brooks Koepka. So I record it, as I do.
As usual.
Took the kids public skating after school. There was no school's PA day. Later in the day, I took them public skating. Got home. Leaf game doesn't start till 10:30. They're in San Jose. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to jump right in, watch the match, get through some of the nonsense, and watch it. So it was pretty good. I'm not going to lie. The best part about it was the course. This beautiful golf course at the Wynn Hotel in Vegas. They had this amazing aerial shot above the course, and it's this beautiful green land in the middle of the desert, which was a really cool view, real cool thing to see. Of course, Vegas is going to have the top-notch golf courses. Made me really think, you know, people, they want to gamble when they go to Vegas, and what better thing to do than play 18 holes in the morning, drink some transfusions, and then just gamble on every shot, on every hole, go have a shower, and then get right to the casino. Like, that's a great day in Vegas.
Yeah.
Only thing is, to play this golf course, $600 a round.
Yeah. So it's funny. I was waiting for an opportunity to mention that because I was in Vegas pre-pandemic, November 2019. And a couple of the guys I went with, we said we should golf. We should try and fit it around somehow, some way. We looked at the Wynn course And at that point, I think it was like $500. I was like, wow. Look, I love golf, but I feel like I'd be wasting my money on that because I'll probably tear it up. But yes, very expensive.
You know, the win is comping the big wigs who are spending thousands of dollars at the tables. Here, go play around in the morning just to shake absolutely. It off. But I'll start with the production of the show. So obviously it's on TNT, I believe. Up here it was like on the HLN network. Don't get me started on that. I got my own issues with Canadian TV, sports TV. But the best part was the drone footage that they used. Prior to every hole, they had this amazing drone shot from the tee, all the way down the fairway, weaving through to the green, and then levitate up above the green to give you a good idea of what the hole is like. And then as the players were playing, I get it. It's annoying to have a drone up in the sky, but it was so cool to watch like the putt as the drone was above like Brooks. It was really cool. Something different, understanding that this is some sort of exhibition. You don't need the standard PGA shots all the time. Now, Phil Mickelson, he was on there on the broadcast, and Phil's Phil. He talks a big game, which you think it's a little shticky, but I think he might just be a weird dude. Like, he makes these weird comments and people laugh, but they're like, oh, I think maybe he's being serious. He's the type of guy that at a Christmas party, you don't want to get cornered by him because, you might be talking about asteroids and coffee and how it affects he's a weird dude, right? Charles Barkley, the other guy in there, he was funny. He's funny no matter what. He speaks from a guy who loves the golf game, but he's just really trying to get good at it. Similar to anyone like myself too, you love it, but you're not as good as the pros, and the pros just have this natural ability. Chuck obviously doesn't have it. He's self-deprecating, which makes it the best. He's one of the best broadcasters. Of course, put him on the golf. I love it.
For sure.
They talked about, gambling and all that different stuff with him. So it was good. They had mics on. The players had mics on and they had an earpiece. Players, one, should be mic'd for all PGA events. It was awesome to watch and hear them talk. The commentator jumped in a little too much. I would have loved, every time they got to a green or the player got to the ball, commentators, shut up and let the players and their caddies talk. That was what I thought was really cool. I don't care for the, fake little back and forth fight between these two, but I want to hear, how does Brooks go through his thought process before every shot? How does Bryson come up with his yardages? Those types of things were cool to me.
That kind of reminds me, and just to jump in here, when the XFL played in its first inception, they introduced a lot of different camera angles and a lot of different things we now see in the NFL, in the NCAA, in the CFL. So it takes something like this, an exhibition, to really start the conversation.
Yeah, I was thinking there's got to be a way that we can hear these conversations. I mean, maybe if the players don't want to have mics on them while they're playing in the U.S. Open and the final group, I get that, I guess. But there's got to be a way to have mics around that we can pick up all these conversations and have them sign off on it. The commentators, though, I don't think they realize that the players could hear them the entire time. So a couple times, the commentators, Phil, just was rambling on and on. And Bryson, I'd say, hey, Phil, just waiting for you to finish before I shoot my shot. And then eventually they're like, oh, but they should have been able to shut off the volume to the players' mics. So they got to figure that type of stuff. You could tell that on their drives on the tee box that the commentators were getting to them because they were talking right till they pulled the club back. And these guys were shanking balls all over the place. Good thing it was a pretty open course. Now the players. Bryson, he's just like Phil. They're too shticky for me to really enjoy them. They both think they're smarter than everyone else in the room. And there was a point where the two of them were just talking and everyone else was like, these guys are morons. Like, just trying to be too smart and it becomes a little too snobby. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Bryson finally hits a bomb. He was trying to hit these bombs with this driver that he had. He finally hits one, crushes it, par four, just drills it. And he's like, oh, I thinned it. That's what he says. I thinned it. And Brooks looks at him and is like, man, you're 45 yards from the green on a par four. Shut it. Come on. You bombed the ball. Just go on with it. Brooks, he's just the other side of it. He's just always cool, calm, collective, a little bit put on. But, he was putting lights out. Bryson can't putt. Right. Brooks was just putting lights out, nailing everything. It was great. So, not the greatest event, but it's still cool to watch. I could get Americans on a Friday afternoon wanting to watch this. I'm glad it was only 12 holes and it was over in 8, but it was something different, something good to watch.
Yeah, something different. I mean, certain things, I think sometimes too much access can be too much.
Right.
You know, and as you go into the golf season, I mean, they do have the, you know, the reporters that do fall around, and they do have like their portable booms and everything. So you do pick up some of that sound, but you know, I think it would be difficult to mic players in any sport, in game. I mean, you see it and you know, you open yourself up when it's live sports that there could be a couple choice words that are used. Yeah. And that's part of it.
There needs to be some sort of agreement between the players and the broadcast where there's a delay or whatever it may be, or just openly say to the players, like, hey, listen, there's mics everywhere nowadays. I mean, even if they don't have the mic on them, the players should know there's mics everywhere. Like, come on, watch what you're going to say. I think you got to be cautious of that in all sports nowadays, and no different for golf.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a good thing there's no mics around me when I'm golfing, because maybe a younger version. I don't get too phased anymore. It's just the way it is sometimes.
For me, it's if they had a mic on me while I'm walking down the fairway by myself and I'm just cursing myself out, and then it turns out to cursing the guy on the other side of the fairway that I'm playing against. Like, how did he make that shot? I know he's not good enough to make that shot. He's got horseshoes up his ass. I could get a little rambly there, but you know what? It was a great sports week. So much to get to that we need to get right to our T5 coming up right after this break. It is crunch time in the NFL as we make our way into December, and the players know what is on the line. It was evident on Sunday in week 12, but the game of the week is where we will start. The Green Bay Packers pulled off the 36-28 win over the LA Rams in a back and forth game that saw the Packers have a huge third quarter, thinking it was over before the Rams' strong push in the fourth. Mike, how was your heart rate as the Rams looked to tie it up late?
I felt pretty good. I mean, you know, for the most part, I think the offense started to play more like I expect them to over the course of a season. You know, there's been times this year where the deep ball maybe doesn't work as well, or you have to rely a little heavier on the run game. But I think from the get-go, Green Bay came out at a good pace and was able to move the ball fairly well. You know, Devontae Adams had a big game. Randall Cobb had a great game, and continues to prove why he's a valuable piece for Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, I kind of expected this to be tight after Green Bay started to pull away in the third quarter, especially defensively with the pick six from Rasul Douglas. I just kind of felt at that point, regardless of what was going to happen, I think that it was going to take something significant for the Rams to come back and potentially tie the game or beat Green Bay. After the third quarter, I felt, you know, pretty confident in the way the offense and the defense was playing. And I felt like, you know, the Rams could get a score here and maybe make it interesting, but I just didn't feel that they were going to get back into it and threaten the Packers.
Yeah, and I was looking at it from a different angle with the Rams, and yeah, they lost the game, but I think there's got to be some confidence to build for this team that has high expectations or had high expectations coming into the year. I think they should still, you know, maybe a couple bad weeks or bad games for Stafford, but I think he played pretty well in this game. 21 for 28, 302 yards, 3 TD passes. He proved that he could lead this team. I know they've added some new players, and I think maybe it takes some time, especially in football, for any player joining a team to get used to the group, used to the system. How are they going to utilize them? We saw, you know, Beckham Jr. with a TD catch, so maybe he could start flowing as well. I like this Rams team. I think that they're going to be good. I think they played the Packers well. Maybe they would like to go back and maybe play a little bit better in the third quarter. But I think this is a team that's going to have some momentum moving forward, a team to watch to have a big push before the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, they this is their third straight loss. So that, you know, that is an issue of in itself. But they played well. And they're playing against, and look, not to be homerish here, but they're playing against a team who is considered a top contender in the conference. So I mean, it is what it is. You're on the road. Lambeau Field's a tough place to play regardless of where you sit. Now they got the Jaguars this week. Hopefully they don't look past that, because in week 14, they go to Arizona.
Right.
So if they can get a win this week coming up against the Jaguars, maybe depends what the Cardinals do. If they drop a game this week or if they win, you know, that could be a big game. It will be a big game, but it could mean more in terms of the standings in the division. But look, I think when it's all said and done, the Rams will be a playoff team and they're not going to be an easy out.
Yeah, and there's a chance now. I mean, Packers now kind of comfortably have the lead for the NFC North. The Rams, looks like they're probably going to be destined for a wild card spot unless something really happens to Arizona, as mentioned. There could be a chance we're going to see a rematch between these two. You never know. We'll see some more football between these two teams, which I think would be great. You know, Rodgers, you know, he's a little showy. I know he's your guy. He's a little showy. The toe thing this past week, putting on cameras, COVID toe. I don't even think that's a real thing. But he played well. He played well. Two TDs. He ran another one in. He's clearly one of the top quarterbacks in the league. And I think he's this could be a year where we look back and say, wow, a lot went on in the last 12 months with Aaron Rodgers. But at the end of the day, he was at the big dance at the end, and that could be the most important thing. Now, he did have a wild comment after the game saying, when I step on the field, I expect greatness. Now, that's only an Aaron Rodgers comment. If anyone else said that, we'd be ripping him. But with Aaron Rodgers, we kind of shrug it off and say, you know, it is what it is.
Well, with those words, you got to back it up. And I mean, you know, last week after missing the game against Kansas City, you know, he played well against the Vikings, and we came up short there. But another good performance for Aaron on Sunday against the Rams. Battling through a toe injury. I know how that feels, man. I got a bad toe. Ask Mr. Dr. Nabetta about that.
Are you a gout guy? Gout in your toe?
I don't think so, no. I think it's more of a joint thing. I don't know what the hell's going on, but mine's the big toe, so it's almost worse. But Aaron, not that they're anywhere comparable, of course, but Aaron, you know, I know how painful a toe injury can be, and especially when you're playing quarterback, you know, especially him as well. He's not just your typical pocket quarterback. Right. He is mobile. I mean, okay, he's 37, so his mobility is still there, you know, but he's a guy that is good at when the play breaks down, he can make plays, right? So he needs that ability to move around the pocket. And I think he looked really good. And it's something he's obviously going to have to manage through the rest of the season. Injections, they're on the bye this week, you know, get some time to heal it. And, you know, it's just going to be one of those things he has to manage. But he's played with injuries throughout his career. And, you know, he's a tough guy and he's not going to miss any time.
With three games on Thanksgiving Thursday and a slew of great games on Sunday, Americans might still be in a food coma. So let's dive into week 12 in our T2. The Patriots won their sixth in a row and now are the top team in the AFC East. While the Cowboys lose two in a row and there is panic in Dallas. Not to mention the AFC West race is heating up with all four teams now having six or more wins. Mike, what was your big takeaway from this week?
I think we've touched on this the past couple of weeks, just impressed with New England. You know, I know Tennessee was without a lot of their big playmakers, Derrick Henry, Julio Jones, AJ Brown now has gone for three games. But, you know, New England outplayed them in every aspect of the game and won convincingly. And this was a team that a couple weeks ago was a top seed in the conference. And now I think New England sits second behind Baltimore in the AFC and currently leads the division over the Bills. And they got a massive Monday nighter this week coming up here against Buffalo. That, you know, I said to a Patriots fan today, I said, the past couple primetime games, Sundays and Monday nighters, have kind of been a letdown the last few weeks, but I think every football fan, regardless if you like the Bills or Patriots, is probably looking forward to next Monday nighter.
Yeah. And Mac Jones, I mean, he can play. He's figured out the system. It's taken him a little bit. You know, maybe a couple weeks back, he really started getting his groove, and now he's full out sailing. So he's got the system down, or it could be Belichick has figured out a system for him and has made that system work great. Either way, they smoked the Titans 36-13, two TDs from Jones, and their defense. The Patriots' defense was forcing turnovers, and the Titans just could not come back. I think we're going to see one of those Decembers where New England takes over the AFC, becomes the top team going into the playoffs. There, I said it. I've learned my lesson. I always said, I don't bet against the Patriots and Brady. I used to say that all the time. They split up. I wasn't sure what to do. Do I go left? Do I go right? Now I'm confused because I can't bet against either of these teams anymore. So I'm just riding the Patriots while I can. And the Bucs, I'm riding the Bucs as well. We talked about the Bucs playing a different style, and they showed it this week. Fournette getting four TDs. I was very impressed with Tampa Bay. Brady knows how to work the game. He took advantage of a struggling Colts defense. They win 38-31. I think it was a little closer than he might have liked. But I'm really liking Tampa Bay right now, too.
Yeah, the Colts were up at halftime, and you know, I felt bad for them because, not because they're one of the teams I picked to make the playoffs, but I think they are a better team than they show sometimes. And credit to Tampa Bay, they held Jonathan Taylor. I think he only had like 85 yards and one touchdown, the NFL's leading rusher. So when you can do that, you know, you're putting yourself in a position to win. Brady didn't have to beat the Colts. You know, oftentimes you rely on those big guys to do it. But Gronk had a real good game. Fournette, as you mentioned, four touchdowns, kind of carried the load there for Tampa. And you know what? Indy will hang around here, 6-5. They have, you know, they have a lot of opportunities in front of them to catch Tennessee while their premier guys are out, and keep themselves in the thick of things in a very crowded AFC.
And we've talked a lot about younger quarterbacks in the NFL that got a lot of flair, you know, some speed and amazing highlight plays. But when it comes down to it, they're still making dumb decisions. That doesn't happen with Rodgers, and it doesn't happen with Brady. You mentioned they were down by 10 at the half. You know, I was a little worried, like, what are the Bucs going to, you know, how are they going to do it? They're just going to fold up here, bail, and look to next week? Because they do have a significant lead on the division. Maybe they could do that. But Brady just calmed everyone down, figured out a way to come back into the game, got really working in the third quarter, two quick TDs, they're back in it, ahead now. And that's what Tom does. And he's been doing it for so long. 8-3 in the division now. I think it's theirs. That's their division. Give it to them. They can now maybe decide, do we want to rest a few guys? If someone's banged up a little bit, sit them back. They know that the Packers or Cardinals are pretty much going to get the top seed in that conference and get that bye. So they're going to be a division winner playing in wild card weekend. Why not rest up a little bit?
Yeah, it's one way to look at it. I mean, you know, the only risk you run there is if you don't have consistent performances. And I think the one theme we've seen from every team this year is that there hasn't been a great pitcher of consistency. Now, a couple teams have went on these extended winning streaks or losing streaks, either way you want to look at it, like New England on a 6-game winning streak. Kansas City's won a few. But there's been weeks where teams look real good, and then the next week, they don't. So as long as you kind of hit, you know, this time of year in with the right momentum. I mean, realistically, Tampa Bay right now is still, you know, Tampa Bay and every team in the NFC is playing for top spots still. You don't know how things are going to shake out. But, you know, if we get to a point over the last couple weeks of the season where, you know, we're not going any higher than third, yeah, maybe you start to consider that, give guys a little bit of a breather. But, you know, some teams like the AFC West, they're going to be battling it out right to week 18.
Right. Can we move on to the Thanksgiving Thursday and just talk a little bit about this and what a mess it is and how brutal the Lions and Bears game was? And that's coming from a guy who follows the Bears closer than any other team in the NFL. It was awful. And I mean, this is your marquee game. Thursday, 12 o'clock, 12:30 kickoff. You got people all over the country sitting down, family coming over, having drinks, having appies, getting ready for a big dinner. Let's watch the football game. It's talked about like the greatest holiday in American history. And you get football. You get food and football. And the NFL is screwing this up badly. There's mistakes by players. There's mistakes by coaches. Besides Christmas Day, it's the biggest audience to be focused on one game. And what does the NBA do? They do it right on Christmas. Stars, stars, stars. That's who plays. And if stars change teams, they change the teams that play on that day. LeBron's always playing on Christmas, whether he's playing for the LA Lakers or if somehow he brings back the Vancouver Grizzlies and starts playing for them. He's playing on Christmas Day. The NFL needs to take a lesson here and start having their stars play in all three games. The six best quarterbacks, that's who should be playing on Thanksgiving Thursday.
I mean, yeah, I suppose I see that argument. You know, the Lions, I couldn't tell you how many years it's been, but the Lions and Cowboys have always played Thanksgiving. You know, at noon on Thanksgiving Thursday, the Detroit Lions are playing at home. 4 o'clock, the Dallas Cowboys are playing at home. Recently, over the last, what is it, maybe 10 years, they've started adding a third game, which is the Thursday Nighter, and there's a bit more flexibility there. You know, on paper, I think going into the year, Bills Saints may look a little bit more appealing, but it certainly wasn't. The Dallas and Vegas game was pretty good going to overtime. But the two on the bookends were not good at all. Unless you're a Bills fan, you know, you saw them beat up the Saints. But I don't know. It's an interesting argument, Stark, and I get what you're saying. I mean, for me, I don't get too excited unless the Packers are playing Detroit. And that's happened a few times over the past few years. But it's just one of those things. The NFL locks in the Lions at 12 and the Cowboys at 4. And that's kind of, you know, for the Lions, that's kind of their thing, right? That's their Super Bowl every year.
Well, the NFL could only have dreamed about a perfect matchup like college football had this weekend. And that will be our T3. What a way to end the college football regular season with a handful of exciting games and nothing more shocking than the Michigan Wolverines beating down Ohio State 42-27 in the snow at the Big House. After that, I did not think things could get more wild, but Alabama had to play comeback to force four overtimes before finally getting the win over Auburn to keep their playoff hopes alive. Mike, what a wild Saturday. How does this shake out for the playoffs?
I think we say the same thing every single show when we talk NCAA. How fitting is it of this season,
right,
that this craziness happens? You know, does that win for the Wolverines save Jim Harbaugh's job?
Definitely. Thought the same thing.
It's, you know, to do what they did against the Buckeyes, playing for all the marbles. They go to their first Big Ten championship since its inception, which is crazy to think. They're playing the Iowa Hawkeyes, who have been there once before. Michigan Wolverines, right, have never been in that game. You know, when you're playing in the same division as the Buckeyes, I guess that's going to happen. But a real opportunity here for Michigan. I think, you know, they're heavy favorites in that game. They win that, they are 100%
in
a playoff team. Yep. There's zero question.
Now, the Big House with snow, there's not a better place for a football game. I'll take that over the national championship game in a dome in Atlanta. The Big House is where it needs to be. Those fans, those students were just rocking all day long. They didn't care about the snow all day. It was noon, but you know, they were up at 7 a.m, tailgating their asses off, bumping around all the different houses on the campus. What a great place to be. Think about how jacked you would be. And the players were jacked up right from the start. Michigan came out early to score, and they could have finished them off in the first quarter if it wasn't for the red zone interception that Ohio State was able to take back and able to keep it a little bit close, because Michigan was just coming in wave after wave. I mean, Michigan had lost 8 in a row against Ohio State. I think last week I said 5. I had to look it up after the show. It was 8. I could not believe it. I mean, a total dominant performance by Ohio State against Michigan. That's why this was the biggest win. The biggest win for Jim Harbaugh. Definitely kept his job. And now they're in the hunt for the playoff spot with only that one win to go. Big Ten championship. Number 16, I think Iowa is going to be roughly somewhere around there. They should smoke them. Go right to the playoffs. My only complaint, going back to what I said at the start, this game for the Big Ten championship will be at Lucas Oil in Indianapolis. What? Let's go right back to the big house, get the snow coming again in December, and play this game like men out on the field, outdoors, Big Ten type football.
That's where the championship has been. I don't know. I can't remember accurately if it's been there every year, but as far as I can remember, that's where the game is. And I share your frustration, not just because the Wisconsin Badgers are not in it. And, you know, there's
what happened there, Mike? What happened? Why did they lose that axe game?
So there's a great GIF, as the youths like to say, that a good friend of mine sent me. And it's very, very accurate for us Badger fans, and it's a triangle, okay, and in the middle is the big W logo, and at the top it says I get my hopes up, bottom right says I get disappointed, and on the left it says I get my hopes up again, and that's pretty much what it is for us. So, you know, we win 7 in a row, have a chance, win, we're in, and we lose. And Minnesota beats us. They get the Paul Bunyan axe. But because Iowa won, they're in. Look, I don't think Michigan's going to have any problem with them. They are right now. The AP poll came out today. They're ranked 2nd. The college football playoffs, the updated poll will come out Tuesday night. So, you know, after our show has been recorded and out, they were sitting 5th last week. I don't see them being, they have to be 2nd or 3rd at minimum.
So, I just talked about the NFL Thanksgiving tradition and screwing it all up. College football gets it. They figured it out. 12 o'clock, Michigan, Ohio State. Great game. Everyone's watching it. Afternoon, you got Bama and Auburn. They didn't put those games going head to head. And Alabama was struggling, man. They were struggling. They didn't score until the 4th quarter. What? Alabama not scoring to the 4th quarter, it was wild. But they stuck with it. They tied it up late. They even had a chance to win it late but couldn't pull it off. Everyone who follows college football or has a group chat of buddies going on, they were all texting each other different playoff scenarios. Oh, now that Ohio State lost, Michigan won. If Bama loses and this team now wins, there's a chance that so-and-so could slip in. Maybe Notre Dame moves up to number 2. Oak State's got to play Oklahoma. Maybe Oklahoma gets in if they win. All these scenarios were just flying around based on Bama losing. But no, not going to happen. Alabama takes it to overtime, 4 overtimes to be exact, and they were able to pull it off and get the win. Just got out of it. Now they still got a chance of that playoff.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what we were going to say and how we were going to approach it watching the game. I'm like, you know, Stark's been making the point about the 2-loss thing all year, and then they get the win. The thing is now, so the college, as I mentioned, the college football playoff rankings are going to come out this Tuesday. And then Selection Day, which they dub it, is Sunday, December 5th. So after all the conference championships have happened, we're going to know who the 4 playoff teams are, and then they'll start to announce the bowl schedule. So if we look at the conference championships, which are happening this weekend on Saturday, Cincinnati plays Houston in the AAC final. You have to like Cincinnati. They win that. How are they not a playoff team? They'll be 13-0. They deserve a spot. Michigan wins the Big Ten over Iowa. They're a playoff team. Georgia, I think regardless of what happens to them, they are a playoff team. I expect them to beat Alabama. If for some reason they do not, they are still a playoff team. If Bama wins, obviously they lock that 4th spot. But if they lose, that's where it gets interesting. And I think it's really between Oklahoma State and Notre Dame as a potential team that jumps into the top 4 for me.
Yeah. I got, you know, Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin all loss on Saturday. Out, done. I 100% agree with you. Georgia's in no matter what. Bama only in if they win. Michigan only in if they win. I think. Cincinnati in. So you got Georgia, Cincinnati. They're in. They're locks. Depending on what happens in the SEC championship, Big Ten championship, we're going to see some sort of combination. I do think Notre Dame's got a really good chance to get in. TV, they want them in there. If they could get Georgia versus Notre Dame as a semifinal, whoo, man, that's a massive game on New Year's Day. That's crazy. I think that's got a chance to let Notre Dame. If Georgia beats Bama, I think they give it to Notre Dame.
The only problem is Notre Dame is 11-1. They don't have a conference championship, right? Because they don't play in a conference. Oklahoma State plays Baylor in the Big 12. Oklahoma State beats them. They're 12-1. Now, okay. I mean, right now, the AP poll has Oklahoma State fifth, Notre Dame sixth. And last week's playoff poll had Notre Dame sixth, Oklahoma State seventh. So that's something the committee is going to have to deal with, provided Alabama loses in the SEC championship, which, I think will happen. So, look, there's a lot to play for this weekend, and then the 11-member committee has some decisions to make next Sunday.
Well, West Coast week as a Leafs fan is always a battle, but I grinded through it for you guys and for our T4. Toronto went to Long Island, to California, and picked up 4 wins in a row to sweep their road trip and come home as the top team in the Atlantic Division with 33 points. Campbell and Wall were studs in the net, while the big boys came to play in LA knowing they could be having a party at Bieber's if they won, and they won big against the Kings. The Leafs are buzzing right now, just playing great hockey. It's fun to watch. They are top 10 in offense. They are top 10 in defense. They are top 10 in the power play. They are top 10 in the PK. I want to ask you, Mike, where are all the clowns that said they would stop following this team? Where are all the frauds who said nothing matters till the playoffs? Where are all the punks that think they should have traded the core four, fired Dubas? Mike, they're all quiet now, and I bet most of them are secretly watching still, watching every single game just so they could still be a part of it. And when something big happens, say, oh yeah, back in 2021-22, I followed them every single game. Stop. You were the ones, you know, blowing up my phone, blowing up the group chat, saying, I'm done with this team. I'm not following them anymore. Let me know when it's the second round of the playoffs, if they're still in it. I'm done with it. Shut it. All those fans, done. Don't want to hear it anymore.
That's the beauty of sports. And when we're so invested, we're so passionate, we say stupid things sometimes. And, you know, usually a couple of weeks later, we start to regret it. And that's probably the case. I mean, it's a massive fan base. It's a very passionate and deep fan base. But look, the proof is in the pudding here. They're playing really, really well. They've been playing really, really well for a long time. And there's no reason for anything other than optimism with this Leaf team. They're playing real well. And JT, I love that guy. Been watching him since the OHL. 6 points last week on the West Coast. Leads the team in points. Captain Toronto, baby.
Yeah, he's playing great. And I'm glad he's playing good after that bad injury to end the season in the playoffs last year. And he's sniffing an Olympic spot. So good for him. You got Matthews now has 10 goals. He's tied with JT for the lead. And Matthews, he's playing a little bit different. You can tell. I mean, obviously he had the wrist surgery, maybe still lingering a little bit, not handling the puck as well. But you know what? He's using his size to his advantage. And it made me really realize how big and strong he is. And he's getting bigger every year as he grows into his body. And he's using it to create space for himself and get those quick shots away. He's scoring goals in front of the net on tips and rebounds, which things he didn't do before, did a couple times on the West Coast. That's good. That's what they need from Matthews, because he's not always going to get the time to make those amazing little snapshots from the top of the circles. Nylander, he was finally being able to get back into the groove here. He found the back of the net a couple times. He made a few really good plays after I was hard on him last week about some defensive miscues. He's playing good. He's back into the game now. If they can get these two lines rolling, awesome. On the back end, Muzzin, Hull, playing shutdown defensive hockey. Simple plays for these guys. If I was the defensive coach, which I've been a defensive coach before, and I got a couple, you know, big guys that maybe just barely got past the 12th grade, every time they come off the ice, all you got to do is lean in and whisper to the ear, high and hard off the glass and out. We'll take an icing. Just play smart. No pizzas up the middle. And I hope that's what the Leafs are whispering in these guys' ears, because they're playing great. Sandin and Lindgren, they're now playing together, and they actually look pretty good for a couple young guys. You know my thoughts on Sandin. He should be the QB on the power play one. I'll save that for another time. Great young player. I think he's a stud.
Another guy I want to point out, Michael Bunting. 5 points on the West Coast trip, playing real well for the team right now. I think he's in the, what is it, fifth in points right now? And he, I remember watching that guy with the Sioux Greyhounds, a good player, and nice to see him fitting in well here after some tough times in Arizona there. So fitting in well and, producing for the team.
Yeah, great play by Dubas to pick him up. Obviously, he's no Zach Hyman, but if you look at the numbers, I mean, they're pretty close considering Hyman's got PP one time with McDavid and Draisaitl. I like this Bunting. Now, the standings, just quickly want to touch on that. It's important for the Leafs to bank these points now. Stay hot while you can, because you know there's going to be some bumpy water in the season. So get them now while you're hot. The first in the division should be the goal. You want to be the top team in this division because you know Tampa Bay, Florida, and let's not forget about the Bruins. They're coming for them. If you get that first spot, you don't have to play them in the first round. You can get that move on, play the wild card team, whoever it may be, Rangers, something like that. Maybe Islanders come back. That's the matchup you want in the first round. They've won 14 of their last 16. Coming from someone that watches every Maple Leafs shift, this is the best this team has looked as a group since they've been put together. The Leafs are amazing right now. Ride it. If you're a fan, keep watching. And any of those fans that told you they're not watching anymore, you send them a text and you tell them to shove it anytime they message you about the Leafs.
There's no one I'm more happier for than you.
Thank you. I just, you know what? I have these names and faces in my mind right now of the people that were all over me after they lost in the playoffs and they had a slow start. I want to call them out, but I'm too nice of a guy. So let's move on, Mike. Okay, let's move on.
The pinkish hue is red with passion and fury.
With so much amazing sports this weekend, I made the effort to always have the Canadian Olympic curling qualifiers on a side TV so I can be engaging during our T5. This past weekend, it was settled who would represent Canada at the Olympics for curling, and the best was on display. Brad Gushue won for the men, while 46-year-old Jennifer Jones won for the woman to represent her country for the third time. Mike, I know you were locked in, so tell me your thoughts.
What a great week of curling. It was a tremendous tournament. The action, I was glued in every day, afternoon, evening, some morning draws when I could. Just both the men's and women's side provided some good theater and a lot of reasons for optimism heading into the Olympics. So, as you mentioned, Jennifer Jones gets the win, will be representing Canada for the second time. She won the trials in 2013, went on to win gold in 2014 in Sochi. Real good opportunity to do so again. So, a real tight game with Tracy Fleury. Fleury was 8-0 throughout the round robin. Tight 4-4 after 8. Fleury picks up 1-9. 10th end, Jones had a chance to hit for 2. I think she put a little too much weight on the shot, rolled out, and only took the 1 to tie it. Tracy Fleury, the skip from her team, looked like she was going to throw up, cry, possibly, I don't know. There was so much emotion in her face and knowing they were still alive.
She said, she's like, Jennifer Jones makes that shot 99% of the time. Not only does she not win, but then I believe Fleury then gets the hammer in the 11th.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you know curling, if you got the hammer, especially in an extra end, you control everything. You can set up the strategy, set up everything the way you want it, block out the opponent, knock out the rocks when you need to, so that last shot, a nice little draw to the button to win. But she couldn't figure it out. She couldn't get it going. She wrecked on the guard on her last shot. It looked like maybe the pressure just got to a younger competitor where Jones had that experience that she could get it done.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I felt bad for Tracy because she had been so good on draws. I think possibly the best skip, if not the best, one of the best with draw weight throughout the entire week. And that was the shot she had. And unfortunately, like you said, wrecked on the guard, came up light. And as a result, Jones steals and is going to represent Canada again. But, you know, on her team, I think Russ Howard made the point. Caitlin Law is the third for Team Jones. Quite honestly, could be the best women's curler in the world right now. She is that good. And they're just a really, really solid team. So, you know, they finished 5-3 in the round robin, but they're one of those teams you don't want to play them in the playoffs, and they prove why. Shout out to my team, the team I've been supporting for many years, Team McCarville out of Thunder Bay. They snuck into the tiebreaker, won their first game, unfortunately fell to Jones in the semifinals, but looking forward to see what they can do on their home ice at the Scotties later in January in Thunder Bay. So a great, great result for the women's side.
Yeah, and then on the men's side, it was kind of a similar situation where Brad Jacobs, he also kind of had the chance to win or at least force an extra end on the 10th, and he just couldn't stick his final rock, just kind of slid off to the side, and it gave Gushue the win. It was more of a slow game, the men's one. A little bit more strategy, a couple blank ends, quite a few blank ends right in the middle. They were waiting for it, but then they really turned it up at the end. Now Gushue, he won gold in 2006. I think he's got another chance to win it here in 3 months, and he's got a really good shot at doing it too.
Yeah, I think for the game between Gushue and Jacobs, it was really going to be about who made the last mistake. And unfortunately for Brad Jacobs, it was his team. The two best teams on the men's side throughout the tournament, honestly, the two best men's side, I think, over the last few years, and either would have been a fitting winner. But, you know, Brad Gushue, a great story, like you mentioned, won gold in 2006, I think has a really good opportunity. His third, Mark Nichols, is one of the best in the business. This guy can make shots like nobody else. So, you know, lots of great shot making over the week. And like I said, I fully expect we're getting double gold in Beijing in a few months. And I'm just looking forward now. We got the Scotties coming up at the end of January, the Briars in March. I found out the women's Ontario Scotties to determine who will represent our province in the Scotties is going to be played, I think, at Thornhill Golf Club, which isn't too far from us in early January. So maybe I'll head out there and try and catch some of the action. So a good way to end the year. And I'm always looking forward for more curling once a big tournament ends.
Mike will be live tweeting from the Ontario Women's Championship, so look out for that in January.
No, nobody cares what I say.
Now, in week 12 in the NFL, it was a boring tie between Mike and I. Mike had Buffalo and Baltimore. I had New England and San Francisco. The series is now still led by Mike by 3, now at 25-22. Mike now gets the first pick. But first, let's hear the games. We got the Thursday nighter, Dallas -5 at New Orleans. Sunday at 1:00, you got Cincinnati -2.5 hosting the LA Chargers. The Sunday at 4:00, Baltimore -3.5 at Pittsburgh. It used to be a great defensive battle. And then the Sunday nighter is Kansas City -9.5 against the Denver Broncos. Mike, where are you starting us off?
Going off your point about the teams starting to build this consistency as we get closer to the playoff crunch, a team I like, I want to see them put together some consecutive performances. I'm going with the Cincinnati Bengals at home -2.5 over the Chargers.
Wow. I was going to pick the Chargers no matter what. I like Justin Herbert. I know they had a bit of a setback here. Had him as my lock, but I like the Chargers, so that'd be good.
Win-win.
I'm going to go to the Thursday nighter. We've seen it before with this team. The Cowboys bounce back. Loss, big bounce back. Loss, due for a bounce back against New Orleans. Thursday night primetime game. Give me the 5 points. They'll win by 10.
Kamara started practicing today. Thank you. I'm going to go with the Ravens. I think Baltimore, you know, will have a better performance. Pittsburgh, there's a lot of problems there. I'm going Ravens -3.5 at Pittsburgh.
There's a lot of problems in Steelertown. Yeah. And if it snows in Pittsburgh at Sunday at 4 o'clock and Big Ben gets sacked once, he might not get up ever. They might just hook him up to a cart and pull him right off. Sunday nighter, I don't know. Denver, what are they? Just give me the Chiefs. -9.5 is a ton, but I'll take the Chiefs.
It's a lot of points.
A lot of points. So I've got Dallas -5. Mike was on New Orleans. Mike's got the Cincinnati Bengals -2.5. I got the Chargers. Mike's also got the Baltimore Ravens -3.5. Well, I'm stuck with the Steelers. And I got Kansas City -9.5 on the Sunday nighter. That wraps up our NFL picks and our T5. We have a short break and then rapid fire with some more hot takes. It felt like every time I looked at my phone over the last 7 days, something major was happening in the sports world. So Mike and I felt we should touch on each topic with a quick thought and then move along in a fun session of rapid fire. Mike, I got 10 hot topics. I want to know what you think quickly, and then we'll move on. You ready, my friend?
More than ever.
Number one, the Blue Jays signed Kevin Gausman to a 5-year, $100 million contract, and Robbie Ray signs a 5-year, $115 million deal with the Mariners.
Love it. This gives us a great 4-man rotation. Ryu, Barrios, Alex Manoah, and now Gausman. Gausman for 5 years, Barrios for 7 years. I think Ryu's got another 2. Manoah's a young up-and-coming guy. Great 4-man rotation. Great way to supplement the loss of Robbie Ray. Love it.
Clearly, Robbie did not want to play for Toronto anymore. He had his mind made up. Good on the Toronto front office not to wait and beg for him. Once he said no, move on. And they did. They signed a quality pitcher, fit perfect in the rotation. Maybe someone that P. Walker can build up even more. The next 4 or 5 years, this rotation is going to be lights out. They couldn't blow the bank on a big arm like a Scherzer or something crazy like that because they got to pay Guerrero and Bichette in the next year or so. So this is a good move. Love it. Number two, the Texas Rangers signed Marcus Semien to a 7-year, $175 million deal.
Not surprising that the Jays didn't get in on that, you know, with big deals with Springer, Ryu, Barrios, and then we got to sign Vladdy and Bo in the coming years. You know what? It just kind of felt like it was going to be a 1-year type deal with Semien. He played incredible. Wish him all the best. Texas, you know, they're trying to spend some money, get better, but you know what? Whatever. That's his problem now.
Yeah, good for him. He had a career year while he was motivated after only having a 1-year deal, and he made the most of it. He's making money. He has the term. Jays wouldn't go that extra year. So be it. Bo's the shortstop. Semien helped him out. One of the greatest seasons in Blue Jays history. Thanks and so long. The New York Mets signed Max Scherzer to a 3-year, $130 million deal.
I think he ranks third in terms of pitching staff salaries in the MLB. My biggest question, Stark, is who's he getting traded to? Because I don't think the Mets are going to be in contention, especially with the Braves, the defending and reigning World Series champions. I mean, look, is he worth it? I mean, he's one of the top pitchers in baseball. It's a lot of money. I don't see him seeing the end of 3 years in Citi Field.
It's not only a lot of money, it's a ton of money, especially for a pitcher. I mean, one bad pitch and that elbow pops. See you later. But, you know, he's the best when it matters the most. And if New York has aspirations of being in the playoffs, this is the guy you want. You want him on your staff. He clearly wants to stay in the NL. So the Yankees and Red Sox were out and he took the money and he thinks they got a chance. So be it. Have fun, Max. The Montreal Canadiens fired Marc Bergevin after 10 years as their GM.
Not surprising. I mean, he was in the final year of his deal, didn't get an extension after taking him to the Cup final last year. I mean, with the start they had, everybody kind of expected that, you know, this was going to happen at some point. They hired Jeff Gorton to replace him as executive VP of hockey ops. They'll bring in a new GM, but the buck is going to stop with Jeff Gorton. He's had a tremendous amount of success with the Bruins and most recently the Rangers rebuild. Good move by the Habs.
This had nothing to do with hockey. he got lucky with a good playoff run last year, or he was going to be gone anyway at that time. He didn't have his star goalie, his captain on the back end this year, both of them out, ton of other injuries to key players. He wanted a big deal. Jeff Molson said no, and it was perfect timing to let him go. See you later. Thanks for your service. We'll find someone else to fill that job. Lincoln Riley leaves Oklahoma for USC, and Spencer Radler enters the transfer portal.
Kind of shocking, you know, after the game, Oklahoma there, Lincoln Riley was asked, are you going to take the LSU job? And he said, no, I'm not taking the LSU job. Nobody asked him about USC. Obviously, like we said on a few shows ago, USC is a destination, right? And the opportunity to rebuild that program in the Pac-12 is very appealing, living in Southern California. Lincoln Riley's a 38-year-old guy, had tremendous amount of success over five seasons in Oklahoma. You know what? Surprising he leaves. Spencer Rattler, we'll see what happens. One team I looked at that could be a destination for him, Ole Miss. Matt Corral's in the NFL draft this year. Lane Kiffin is heralded as an offensive genius. Could be a good fit for somebody trying to up their NFL stock. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Radler was disappointing. He was hoping for a Heisman year and then to move on to the NFL. Now he's forced to play another year of college. But where? Who knows? There'll be a lot of teams sniffing around, but he might have to take a lower tier school that will help him sling it. Ole Miss is a good call on that one. Riley, on the other hand, it was kind of slimy, but you know, that's what you get in college football. It kind of happens more than you think. He must have made this deal last week, told his wife, hey, pack up everything you can that's not nailed down to this house. And then boom, Sunday, the private bird out of Oklahoma, Monday, right into LA. It was like they were leaving a war zone, landing in LA. Unbelievable. Brandon Lemieux of the LA Kings bites Brady Tkachuk of the Ottawa Senators during a scrum.
Bush league. Just terrible. Like that, you know, just ridiculous. I saw it, drew blood. I agree with what Tkachuk said. Just no room for that crap.
Classless, no need for it in the game. I mean, Lemieux's dad was a cheap shot artist, and it seems like his son's going to be one too. Play hard and tough, but you know, biting a player, no. Biting, spitting, definitely no. Suspend him, move on. But if he does something silly like this again, I think the players need to step up and either say something to him if he's on your team, and if he's not on your team, you need to deal with it. The NHL posts the New York Islanders games for another week. Will it affect the Olympics?
I mean, that's the big question, right? We still don't know one way or another what's going to happen. I think it seems from the players' perspective, they all want to be there in the Olympics. And until a decision is made either way, I mean, I really don't know, Stark, to be honest with you. I mean, if they do go to the Olympics, you're looking at a three-week break. If they don't, maybe they shorten that to get in some of these games, which unfortunately have been postponed by COVID. But look, I mean, as fans, I think we all want to see them there. But I mean, until a decision's made, it's, you know, it's just head scratching one way or another.
I want best on best at the Olympics, but I'm starting to get worried. If they have two more teams with postponed games for about a week or so, they won't be able to cram these games in. Plus, they're still going to go ahead with the All-Star game just for ESPN and the money. It could be a nightmare in late January if players and teams start testing positive and they got to pull out last minute, and then they got to start calling AHL guys to fill these teams to go to the Olympics. Let's hope for it to happen and they go to the Olympics, but I'm a little worried. Soccer Canada has selected Hamilton as the host venue to play the USA in January.
Love it. Love it. I think, you know, Southwestern Ontario, Kitchener-Waterloo, Hamilton, Oakville, Burlington, passionate soccer following, big soccer programs in those areas. And I like it. You know, bring the teams to more parts of our country. And Tim Hortons Field's a beautiful facility. Love it.
Brutal. The worst decision in sports. It makes Canadians look like we're trying to be too cute and funny. Oh, we'll make the Americans play in the cold. Ha ha ha. It'll be minus 20 and all the players will be in serious danger. There is no advantage. None None of the Canadians have ever played in this weather as kids. Every elite program in all of Canada has indoor facilities for a reason, so they can play in the winter and keep in shape. If I was Bayern Munich, I would have a problem with one of my star players in Alphonso Davies having to play in these conditions, and I would pull him and say, you're not playing in Hamilton in January on a frozen field. The dumbest decision, and this one's on Soccer Canada. Bad move.
You know it snows in Germany as well.
Come on, Mike.
Let's go to the next one. We're not going to agree on it.
Grey Cup predictions.
Ooh, Argos Blue Bombers. Argos get it.
Give me the Argos. That's my hot take. Last one. I haven't had a chance to talk to you since this came out, and it was awesome. The video of Tiger Woods hitting balls.
Love it. You know, I think all of us love Tiger, and there's nothing more magical than seeing him play at Augusta National. I mean, you know, we're in December. He's hitting balls. We got 5 months until the Masters. I would love nothing more than to see Tiger and, of course, Freddie walk in the luscious grass of Augusta National.
Cam Newton's not back. He got benched. Tiger Woods is back. It's exciting. He might play in the father-son tournament, and he will 100% play at the Masters, and that makes me happy. I don't need him to win. I just want him to be playing, see him out there, watch every shot. Thursday and Friday, you make the weekend even better, Tiger. I just want to see him there. He's got a press conference Tuesday morning, his first since the accident, so maybe we'll know more about his intentions, what his plans are for golf, and how he's going to work himself back in. But you're crazy if you don't think he's got plans of playing again on the PGA. That was rapid fire. That was awesome. There was even topics we had to cut out. That's how busy of a sports week it was, but it was great. Did you enjoy it, Mike? Was it just as good for you as it was for me?
For the most part, yes.
Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, I had the Chargers, and Mike had Ohio State. Moving on to this week, we won't discuss that any further. Mike, you still got the tee. Where are we going?
Reverse jinx. I'm going to go. Look, I think Michigan fully deserves the Big Ten championship. I think they'll get it. They're favorite right now by 10.5 over Iowa. I'm picking them to cover, win the Big Ten for the first time in its inception, and cement themselves in the college football top four. Michigan Wolverines minus 10.5.
I'm going to go with my heart in the final week of college football. The Dogs of Georgia. -6.5 over Alabama. Way better defense. And I don't trust Bryce Young. He's not a top quarterback like previous quarterbacks that Alabama has had. I can see Nick Saban sticking or looking into the portal this offseason, seeing what's out there, maybe grabbing someone else and bringing him in, because I don't think he believes in this guy either. I like Georgia to rout them, and it's all she wrote for Alabama this week. We want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.